Yeah.
True, Bruce Willis is kind of just being futuristic Bruce Willis, like wearing a dirty t-shirt type
Bruce thing. Willis is John McClane in the future. Welcome to the Rampant Discourse Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Lesson. I'm joined by my normal discoursers, Travis Hudson and Andrew Riley. We're continuing our series on the best decade of movies ever, the 1990s. Today, we're going to go over 1997, and we're discussing our favorite movies of the decade, most influential, and a couple others that are worthy of discourse. So, Andrew, why don't you kick us off with the highest grossing movies of 1997?
So, the highest grossing movie of 1997 was Titanic.
No kidding.
With $1,843 million. Or in other words, $1.8 billion. That just, let that one sink in for a minute, because we've been talking about numbers in the 500, 400 million in previous years. We had one or two that hit 600, 800 million. This is $1 billion more than any number we've had so far on the list.
Power of James Cameron.
This is an astronomical sum. Titanic made more money in the box office than Scarlett O'Hara, Gone with the Wind. Which is also astounding, because that thing held the record for forever.
I thought you were going to say, like, then about half of the years in the 1990s combined.
Yeah, that's also
true. Like, you take out Jurassic Park and Independence Day and add the rest of the years up so far, and you probably don't even reach Titanic.
No, even if you add them all up, it's quite possible it's not enough.
And if you had Jurassic Park and Independence Day, you get to Titanic. If you add them together.
If you add Jurassic Park at 800.
Jurassic Park was like 900, wasn't it?
It was 800, and then Independence Day was... maybe another 800. So yeah, it's 1.6. Yeah, okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, it's a lot of money. Yeah. It's a lot of money.
I mean, it held the record until Avatar, right?
Yes.
And which held the record probably until what?
Just another year or two.
Was it Endgame or Infinity War?
Endgame.
Endgame. Although what? Probably Infinity War broke it, and then Endgame broke it the next year or something?
I don't think
Infinity War then?
I don't think they did. I'm not positive, but
they got a lot of people on board. All right.
So number two was The Lost World, Jurassic Park, which, despite being second place, still pulls in enough money to be first place for most of any other year on this list. Three, Men in Black, Tomorrow Never Dies, Air Force One, As Good as It Gets, Liar, Liar, My Best Friend's Wedding, The Fifth Element, and The Full Monty.
I'm actually surprised strong movie is Fifth Element. I'm surprised it made...
Yeah, it's not something that you'd expect to be a top grosser, although they did bill it as an action movie at various points. When you saw the trailer for it, it's one of the most misleading trailers you've ever seen.
I have to imagine Bruce Willis
had
a lot to do with it pulling in that much money. All right. So that's actually a pretty strong top 10. And we had a strong Best Picture nominations. This is going through all the 90s. This looks to me, this is the best set of the movies that the Academy picked. All right. Starting from top to the winner, we got L.A. Confidential, Good Will Hunting, The Full Monty, As Good as It Gets, and Titanic. So
one of those rare instances,
the top grossing is the winner, and As Good as It Gets was a top grossing?
It was in the top 10.
And you said Full Monty was 10th?
Full Monty was 10th place, yeah.
And
LA Confidential, I think it made some... No, it didn't. Never mind. Fifth Element.
But retroactively, it's shocking Good Will Hunting is not in the top 10, right? You said it wasn't in?
Yeah, that was not.
That's like...
I'll pull up its numbers.
Like, I would expect Good Will Hunting to have been in the top 10 grossing over like Fifth Element or Full Monty. It seems like Full Monty has such a more limited audience than something like Good Will Hunting.
Good Will Hunting made $225.9 million. Which would have been enough for, obviously, below Full Monty, which made $257 million. So it's about $25 million short.
Yeah. Ballpark. Yeah. All right, Paul. Or no, Andrew. Let's do our guesses.
That's right. So we are doing our guesses as to which movie we think are on the others' lists to see how well we know each other. And Paul and I are tied with 5 correct guesses apiece. He's really closed the gap here, mostly by guessing my picks for me being too predictable, I guess.
Andrew's very predictable.
And Travis is still in the lead with 8 correct picks.
Because I think have I got like 6 of yours, maybe?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of mine and 3 of Paul's.
Yeah. All right. All right, Paul, what's your picks?
Well, we're going to continue this stretch and Andrew being predictable, because I got you pegged here.
Okay.
So do I.
Fifth Element.
All right.
For Andrew. Travis, I don't know why I picked this one, but I'm going to go ahead and go with it. Starship Troopers.
I was going to say, there's no Tim Burton movie this year, so yeah. you're hard-pressed, right?
Where's the Johnny Depp? Where's the Christina Ricci? Where's the Tim Burton? Yeah, so I'm going to go with Starship
Troopers. Winona Ryder is better than Christina Ricci, for the record.
Okay, good to know. Great
All right, so for my picks, I have, for Travis, Spawn.
Interesting.
And for Paul, Men in Black.
All right. This might be horribly wrong for Paul, but I picked Starship Troopers for Paul. And, yeah, Andrew, Fifth Element. All right. There's history between the three of us and Andrew with Fifth Element.
There's history between us with a lot of movies, apparently.
Andrew made us watch a lot of movies. Although I think we might have watched Fifth Element independent of Andrew.
If so, it was a mistake.
Yeah. Well, Paul, I imagine we'll be talking about this more in a pick or two. All right, Paul, what's your favorite movie of 1997? Tell me Starship Troopers.
Come on, you apes. You want to live forever?
Ah, damn it.
Starship Troopers.
NPH as a space Nazi.
For the guys, this is...
For the record, the best Paul Verhoeven film.
Oof.
I'm just going to throw that out there right now.
Oh, my God.
Over Total Recall.
I might have to leave right now.
He did Total Recall, too?
Didn't we say it? He did Total Recall, right?
Yeah
Total Recall and RoboCop? I don't know. As much as I love Starship Troopers. As much as Andrew hates Starship Troopers.
I stand by this, but I Total Recall is close. Yeah, I mean, Starship Troopers, I know it's not everyone's cup of tea. You have to...
Not have read the book.
It's different from the book. And I don't even want to say you have to not take it seriously, because I do think it has some serious messages behind it, but maybe not the ones that people want to think about. I don't know. I find it to be a very interesting and deeper than people might expect movie, but you can also appreciate it on a very surface level.
So you can appreciate it as almost a campy movie.
Yeah, it works completely as a completely campy, just over-the-top machismo, overly violent
co-ed movie. Showers. Scenes,
co-ed showers, like nudity for no clear reason.
Deborah Messing crawling in the other guy's tents.
Deborah Messing.
Isn't that her name?
No, Dizzy is not Deborah Messing, I don't think.
Okay.
Is
it? I have no idea.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not. I'm pretty sure it's not. It looks kind of like her, but I don't think it is. But I mean, it's got Denise Richards in it. Shockingly, she's not the one that gets.
She's not naked. She's naked in plenty of other 1990s movies, but not this one.
If there's one knock against this movie, it's that they had Denise Richards in a prominent role, and for some reason, and a lot of nudity, and for some reason, did not have her get nude, which is weird. But it's just a fun movie, really quotable. Got Neil Patrick Harris, kind of kickstarted his
Dina Meyer,
yeah, kind of kickstarted his post Doogie Howser career. Michael Ironside in his very stereotypical role. Just a really fun movie. I'll watch it whenever it comes on TV. The graphics still hold up pretty well, and I think it has
Zurg.
Yeah, it's got these weird Zurg overtones to it with the bugs and whatnot. It's a good parody, I think, of a fascist society. And I don't know if I would necessarily call it a deep movie, but I think it can work on more levels than it's the top corny one.
So let Andrew have his say of why the book is so much better.
Why he's wrong.
So let me start with the movie for a second. Independent of the book, the movie has some merit. Some merit. It is not at all the best movie of this year, but the merit is exactly what you're saying.
Opinion,
it's this, it's a satire of the fascist statement. So there's that surface level, and then there's a second level. Whereas maybe this satire is in fact going too far. Verhoeven is so heavy-handed with the satire in this film that you can almost say, you know, this satire is itself indicating that the other side of the anti-fascism is wrong. You need to find some sort of middle ground here to make this kind of society work, because it's clearly not working. The problem that this movie has, in addition to just being ridiculously campy for no reason, is that it is...
Because it's fun.
It's borrowing source material and bastardizing it when you could have had a movie that had exactly those same political overtones and conveyed it in a better way with the same kind of action, and you guys are missing out on it. You're missing out on the movie that Starship Troopers could have been because Verhoeven wanted to make his political statement rather than the books.
Well, so my kind of point to that is, I like the movie and the book. Like, I don't know, Paul's, you've probably read the book, right?
Yep.
So, like,
I don't disagree with what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying I don't disagree. I appreciate them as two different things.
Right, which is why I do have to say that independent of the book, if this is just a movie called Space War, where we're fighting bugs, It's mediocre. No, I can see some merit. What makes me hate it is that it is called Starship Troopers and clothes itself not just in the title of the book, but all of the imagery of the book. The characters' names, the armor is just a bastardized version of the armor, so, you know, but they don't want to spend the money. They spend the money on everything else, but they don't spend the money on the armor. Well, what's the point?
Yeah, no, like I said, I don't disagree that the book is different, that the movie is not a accurate representation of the book. I don't even know, but I don't know if I agree that they cloak themselves in the imagery, because to your point, like, they don't have the power armor, which is, to me, one of the main visuals that I take away from the book.
One of the most important things in the book is the history and moral philosophy classes,
right.
And that's still there.
That is still there,
and it's still, there's direct quotes from Heinlein's passages mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. the movie, except that they're used wrongly. They're used for Verhoeven's purposes, they're which is the exact opposite as Heinlein's.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with any of those criticisms. I guess I'm capable of some cognitive dissonance, if that's the correct
yeah, I think that's fair.
Of the word, and say, like, I can appreciate the book for itself, and I can appreciate the movie for itself, and recognize that they are completely different beasts.
And in a way, for better or worse, and I can maybe ask this question of Paul, because, Andrew, you're already familiar with him. Would you even know who Robert Heinlein was if it was not for this movie?
Yes, well, let me. Before seeing the movie, maybe not. But I have read some of his works afterwards.
Right, but like, would you have read anything from him? Not meeting Andrew ever, and not having seen this movie, would you ever have picked up anything by Robert Heinlein?
That's almost impossible to say.
It's an impossible question.
It's counterfactual, but take a stab at it.
I'm gonna guess no.
Yeah, because for me, yeah, it would almost absolutely be no. Like, I might have heard his name somewhere else or something mm-hmm. like that, but. Yeah, I read Starship Troopers, I read Stranger in a Strange Land, I tried to read Lazarus Long? No, Time Enough to Love.
Time Enough to Love is tough.
Yeah, I tried to get through that and gave up and unfortunately haven't gone back to them. But.
There's a couple of pieces in there that are really worthwhile. I'll just snip them out for you so you don't have to read the whole thing.
I mean, the whole premise of the book is he lives a long time.
So. I mean, there are other science fiction authors that I know are in classics that I just have not ever gotten to. And there are others that, you know, I have read, even though...
I mean, it would be kind of the same, right? Like, I've never read the source material. I'm sure people... Andrew, you've probably watched and seen both iRobot.
Yep.
Is it the same argument, probably, then?
No, not at all, because
is the book... Or is the movie closer to the spirit of the book?
The movie is both closer to the spirit and also, even though they're using the name and the three laws, the iRobot is a series of short stories.
I was gonna say, It is a different scenario where, like, Asimov kind of created a world.
He created a world
that you could tell different stories in.
Exactly. And so this is a story that you could absolutely see Asimov having had a hand in. It's not an Asimov story.
Yeah, it's kind of like
has a style.
Yeah, it's like making a Sam Spade movie or something like that. Yes, there was an actual Sam Spade in stories, but you can make them in whatever you want.
Okay. So there's huge differences, but as many things as were wrong with iRobot, the fact that it was, you know, iRobot and borrowing those ideas wasn't necessarily one of them.
So that's just my first favorite movie.
All right.
And we're already...
Well, Andrew, they want the disagreement. Thank you for bringing it with that piece of crap.
Speaking of disagreement, did we get your
You did
favorite?
Not get my favorite.
Oh!
It's going to be influential.
Influential? Really?
So, my favorite movie for 1997 is Wag the Dog.
Not even on my list.
Yeah. Not seen on my list either.
So Wag the Dog is a political comedy... With Woody Harrelson.
I mean, I knew the basic of it.
And Robert De Niro. And Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, you lost me.
And Dustin Hoffman is playing a Hollywood producer who De Niro, as the political fixer, hires to put on a series of shows and ad campaigns to prop up the president's flagging poll numbers as he's embroiled in a scandal because he's had sexual impropriety with a Girl Scout, basically.
I wonder where they got that from.
Yeah, well, it came out right after the Monica Lewinsky scandal, which is why this was relevant at the time. But it was, in fact, not necessarily a response to that because it was in production for quite a while before then, and it's based on a book, although the book has very little to do with the movie, ultimately. I like this movie not just because of some of those overtones, but because of a lot of what it says about the nature of politics and the visibility of politics, not what is on the surface. It's the first movie that really does a very good job of describing the media culture that we currently live in fact. Where we see something on the news and we believe it to be true because the media tells us it.
I was going to say, in a world of fake news, it sounds very
It is relevant. Spot on for fake news. So it is well worth seeing, even though it was obviously a 90s movie with references to 90s events. It is spot on for right now. And it has, again, great comedy in it. There are instances of the deep state, for lack of a better word, trying to fight back against this, saying, we know that this thing that you are saying is happening isn't happening. What is going on here? And the pageantry of the events keeps getting bigger and bigger because they need it to. And ultimately, it ends with just some fantastically well choreographed and well acted sequences between De Niro and Hoffman.
All right, I'm going to call back to one thing with one of comments you made, Paul, which I actually thought about too, but that Starship Troopers kind of resurrected MPH, you know, Patrick Harris. Mm-hmm. It really didn't.
It didn't?
I'm looking at his acting credits between Starship Troopers and Harold and Kumar. There's nothing.
Oh, well, okay.
Harold and Kumar is what resurrected. But that's a gap of 7 years.
Okay.
So you can't really say Starship. Now, to your credit, like, I do connect the two.
Yeah.
But there is a 7 year gap of
without Starship Troopers.
He probably would not have.
I don't know if he gets Harold and Kumar because he's just too typecast.
They were playing off of Doogie Howser, though.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe.
So, my favorite, neither one of you got. I've kind of hinted at it, I definitely hinted at it last year when I hinted at Nick Cage's Apex.
Oh.
It's Con Air.
Yeah. Was that the prison movie we're talking about?
Nope.
Is that okay?
That's not my prison movie.
Okay.
We're 1 year away from
prison
movie.
Yeah, it's Flying Prison. It's Shawshank still beats it as a prison movie. Shawshank is the successful, serious prison movie.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to make a joke on striptease for Showgirls, but I didn't want to put Showgirls and Shawshank in the same sentence.
Fair enough.
Con Air is the we're winking and smiling blatantly at the camera while we're making this movie.
It has a lot of fun with it.
It's one of my worst
Discourse
movies.
Why'd you touch the bunny?
Yeah.
I mean, like, this...
bunch of convicts on an airplane singing Sweet Home Alabama.
The definition of irony. I mean, yeah, like, Steve Buscemi, John Malkovich,
Colin Meaney.
Yeah, Nick Cage, even John Cusack, for crying out loud. Like, yeah. not his height,
yeah.
But he's there, like, getting his... No, he doesn't get his car crashed. The other guy, the half-bald guy, kind of gets... They drop the car off the back of the plane, and it crashes into his Ferrari or whatever. Like, yeah, like... Yeah, no, it's hilarious. It is... It's a peak action movie. Like, you're talking about summer blockbusters. Like, it's funny. Starship Troopers is a later in... I remembered it as a summer movie. It's actually a later in the year movie.
It kept getting delayed because, like, their production was all over budget.
Like, Con Air and Lost World were the summer movies.
I think that actually 97. Is one of the reasons why I hate Starship Troopers so much, is that I was so excited for it.
Mm. He's not going to let it go.
I'm not. Yeah. I'm not.
Just think about the wonder that is Con Air. Then.
Yeah, I mean...
It
was one of the worthy of discourse ones. It's the beginning of Nick Cage as the... I mean, The Rock was... He was in an action movie, but he wasn't an action star in The Rock. Whereas Con Air, he kind of transitioned to a full-blown action
Con Air changed, like I said, like, what? I forget what year it was because I never saw it. But Leaving Las Vegas, he won Academy Award. Maybe it's a semi-serious movie? I don't even know. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
He won Academy Award. I assume it's a serious role. Then he goes and makes, The Rock, Con Air, and there's one more in there.
Face Off,
yeah, which is this year.
This year, yeah. It's also worthy of discourse.
Yeah, he makes those three, and then has this really weird remainder of his career where he's making Knowing and The Sorcerer's Apprentice and...
8mm?
Eight millimeter. Whew, all right. But this movie it's not the perfect action movie, but it's pretty damn good. And it's funny.
Yeah.
Which some action movies will kind of forget to do. But the better ones, as we've highlighted, you remember to be funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I have it. I don't disagree. I'm surprised it's that high up for you.
Yeah. And it has, like, the twists of, like, you totally expect Steve Buscemi kills that little girl.
Yeah.
He didn't.
As twists go, it's one of the smaller ones.
I mean, he's a very, very minor role in this movie, although he's... Everybody remembers him.
Yeah,
like,
he's there.
I listened to the rewatchables for it, though, and, like, they did note there's some not-so-aged-well things about, like, threatening to rape the female prison guard and things like that. And like,
why has that not aged well? Because at the time, that was like, even the convicts on there were like, that's too far. Like, that is...
Yeah, when Acid or whatever his name is like,
yeah,
like telling you we don't do that.
There are like murderers on there who are like, look down upon him because he's Johnny.
Okay, so another one that hasn't aged, they said, I don't want to quote another podcast on our podcast, but they were also saying like, since we've talked about trans stuff and everything in earlier, because like the male convict that is kind of dressed up as a, or acts kind of girl in this one.
Oh yeah, I completely forgot about that.
I mean, you could also bring up the Queens and Shawshank, but that's like, that's
prison life.
That's prison. Yeah, that's like a real, kind of a real seriously thing. So, but yeah, but I don't hold any of that against Connor. It's all part of the joke. Like, you have to take it as they're not being serious. They're not being Shawshank. They're not being Escape from Alcatraz. They're being full on. You're laughing at this. Like, even The Rock was more serious than Con Air was.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, and then the spectacle of landing a plane on the Las Vegas Strip. And then, we always talk about songs. It had a big song in it too, when he's meeting his wife after the plane crashes. But
yeah, From This Moment or something, maybe?
No, or it's like, I don't know. But
I thought it was Faith Hill.
It was a big country song, or country pop song. But anyway, what's your influential movie?
All right. Yeah, baby, yeah. Austin Powers. The Spy Who Shagged Me.
The first one.
Mostly because I think this really kind of catapulted Mike Myers. I know we talked about Wayne's World before, but that was...
He was still niche.
Yeah, it was still kind of a niche thing, and it wasn't as big as this, I don't think. And he wasn't like the main star. Like, before he was kind of...
He was top billed, but yeah. Dana Carvey was probably
a two-man
more
show.
Well-known. Yeah.
And this was
a two-man show. Mike Myers just happened to be the other man.
Mike Myers was playing all the different roles, and it was kind of a tour de force.
No, only two in this one.
Maybe.
He didn't do Fat Bastard until the second one.
It kind of a little bit resurrected the like spoof of spy movies.
Like Naked Gun, all that.
And
Loaded Weapon and all that.
I think this kind of brought Elizabeth Hurley into like the mainstream a little bit. She had, I wanted to check. I think she had movies before, but I think this is, and I think Vanessa Shaggington was kind of her big breakout role. And, you know, even just taking Austin Powers by itself, there were three other movies afterwards of varying degrees of quality and success. But
although I would have, Austin Powers, yes, as a movie. Dr. Evil probably has been possibly more influential than Austin Powers himself has been.
But in the movie.
But yeah. But then also, I'd have to look in when Family Guy premiered. This is a very kind of family. There's a lot of Family Guy style jokes in this.
Yeah.
The whole, like, it's a giant wiener dog, blah, blah. Like, it's.
Yeah.
That's a very kind of Family Guy-esque sequence of jokes there.
Similar type of humor. But just from the way it kind of reinvigorated like the spoof of spy movies, it kind of kickstarted a couple of different people's careers. Mike Myers, Elizabeth Hurley.
It was popular enough to be...
Seth Green was in it.
Hey, I got my hair cut to try to look like Seth Green in this movie.
Yeah, and kicked off a somewhat successful series of movies.
That's what I'm referenced on Frasier. That's when you know you've reached...
Sure.
I don't know how far you've gotten in your Frasier watching, but yeah, there's an episode where Marty is in an RV and he comes... He's watching Austin Powers in the back, and he keeps coming up and doing very bad Austin Powers impressions.
I'll tell you where I am. I'm where they got an increase in their budget, because it's a very it's funny, and this will be a short tangent. The first couple seasons, or whatever, there's like two sets. There's like the radio station, and there's like his apartment, and that is it. And then all of a sudden, there's like every episode has had like, oh, now we have Niles' practice room, and now we have like an outdoor set, and now we have like someone else's office.
They very rarely do outside.
Yeah.
They do outside caffeine. This is actually relevant. Andrew's looking at blah, blah. Like, if we're talking about 90s stuff, like Frasier was pretty big in the 90s.
Yeah. But
this particular
time. It's just funny because every single episode has had like a huge new set that they spent most of their time in. I'm like, that's new.
They had three sets in the first season.
Yeah. The cafe, home. And
I think the first scene of the first episode might be in the cafe. No, it's in the radio station.
Puppy. Because they usually start with that.
To take it back to Austin Powers.
Let Andrew start talking.
And the influential portions of it.
Yeah.
First off, I've not seen all of Austin Powers.
The first one?
Yes.
Okay.
What I have seen, I really don't like.
I accept that. It is not something that I think appeals to everybody.
That said, I do recognize it as hugely influential on the culture because of its just far-reachingness, and that is what the example I'm going to bring up is. When I went to Virginia Tech for my orientation, it was Austin Powers everywhere.
So it was Austin Powers 2 at that point, but yeah.
Well, maybe.
I know that because, like, as part of our senior year at high school, like after graduation or something, everybody went to see Austin Powers, the spy, the second one.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever. Spy Who Shagged Me is the second one, I think. Yeah.
I don't know.
International Man of Mystery is the first one.
Yeah,
it's
the
right.
first one. Yeah.
So, but all I can say is that was a thing that was going on where the RAs and even the staff of the school who were there to orient us and the mixer that they had, everything was Austin Powers everywhere. It was just astounding to me. And I still, no. But
the second one is actually superior to the first one.
It's a bold call. I don't know if I agree or not. I'll think about it.
Fat Bastard, Mini-Me, the continuation of Dr. Evil, Seth Green has a bigger role in it.
It really comes down to Elizabeth Hurley versus Heather Graham to me. And I kind of come down on Elizabeth Hurley's side there.
Don't know what you're talking about, but that's okay. So, yes, it's an influential movie. I will grant you that. That doesn't mean it's good.
Not as influential as Andrew's influential movie.
Probably more influential. I'll grant that one. But I don't like that one, so I'm going with one I do like.
The Fifth Element wasn't very influential.
The Fifth Element is a very influential movie, and it is my influential pick.
Yes.
So, guys, you get a point.
It's a wash.
The only person who loses in this game is me. for being so predictable. Or just being very vocal about what I like, I guess.
Yeah.
That's something. The Fifth Element is influential because with how it portrayed a future world that wasn't what we were used to at that point. You have the multipass. You have Chris Tucker. Wrong Chris.
It certainly catapulted his career. Into the basement.
Hey, he made Rush Hour.
I know. That's like it.
But
he was not in it.
No, I think that was just basically his entire movie career path. The future world that it presented was something that hadn't been seen before and has had some legs in other movies.
I was going to say, thankfully, it hasn't been seen since. I don't know. I know you guys like the future is weird for the sake of being weird.
It's not weird for the sake of being weird. You asked for the best movie president. Tiny Lister is the president in Fifth Element.
Is that Gary Oldman?
No.
No.
I don't know. No.
Tiny Lister, not Gary Oldman.
You're about to say something that sounded like implied Paul and I don't like the movie. You're about to say it sounded like.
Yeah, I know Paul doesn't like Fifth Element. Okay. I'm pretty sure you do.
I like it. No, I do like
cool.
it.
Cool.
I know.
So. I know Paul did.
Unless it's unclear, I don't like the Fifth Element.
But I also understand, like, it's an easy thing to make fun of, too, when you're drunk
weird.
And saying, the Fifth Element is love!
Yeah.
So, like, and multipass. But, like, yeah,
It's got some very silly moments in it. I will not deny that at all. But it has some really strong, serious moments as well.
But it's also, like, I mean, it's visually striking.
Yeah. It has, Paul is completely unimpressed. We got you.
Yeah.
You like Starship Troopers. You can't say anything.
That's a fun, good movie.
Like, but it's also like, to the sci-fi movies we've talked up to this point, like, they're unique, but, like, it's not Mila Jovovich with neon orange hair. It's not Gary Oldman with whatever, his outfit and his hair.
The plastic haircut.
And, like,
yeah.
True, Bruce Willis is kind of just being futuristic Bruce Willis, like wearing wearing a dirty t-shirt type
Bruce thing. Willis is John McClane in the future.
But yeah, like basically. That kind of speaks to how well that character works almost.
He also serves to ground the movie, which with something that is, more appropriate.
Right.
When you want a future movie that's set, 40 years in the future, 50, 100 years in the future, you need it to be futuristic, something different. And he allows it to be futuristic with still having someone that you can relate to.
You needed him to counterpoint Gary Oldman, Chris Tucker, even Mila. Without him, it would be
all the crazy stuff that makes no sense. Yeah. Crazy off-putting stuff.
So I guess it's my influential, which I was nice and boring here, and I said Titanic. Like,
so you didn't pick Starship Troopers or anything? No. Or no, you picked it as your favorite?
No, my favorite was Con Air.
Oh, that's right. I whiffed.
So, like, I'm not even totally sure why I said Titanic. It just felt like that was, it was the highest grossing movie for a long time. Visual effects, like it was even with what James Cameron had pulled off with T2, it was still visually like, and it's a movie that truly paid off seeing it on the big screen. When you're watching like the back half of the Titanic come down on all the people, that's not the same sitting at home on the biggest of big screen TVs that you have. Like seeing that on the big screen was a sight to see.
The visual effects during the "Draw Me Like You Draw Your French Girl" scene, top notch.
Okay, yeah. So there you go again. Like
what we understand here is Paul likes boobs.
Yeah, or like Kate Winslet. Yeah, her Golden Globes.
Hey, Mila Jovovich was naked in Fifth Element. That was a crappy movie.
But like, I mean, this is pretty good Leo performance.
Yeah.
And it has some social commentary on it. Like I said, Billy Zane is eternally the bad guy in my mind from this movie. But yeah, like just
should Rose have made room on the wooden plank for Jack? Could they both have survived
or taken turns or something?
Right? Yeah,
yeah, oh, yeah. You could. I'm not here. That's not why it's influential.
No, I'm asking you. What do you think?
She. They could have done something.
They could have tried.
They could have tried. Yes. Yeah. Whether or not they both died, then who knows? But you don't know unless you try.
Exactly.
Unless you're Yoda, then there is no try.
Yeah.
So, something more worthy of discussion?
We already covered Con Air. I just want to throw out Face Off, because I think that... I don't know which one I like better, Face Off, Con Air.
It's Con Air.
Maybe Con Air.
Face Off is a little too convoluted for its own good.
It's also very stupid.
The conceit is ridiculous as well, too.
I think they're very similar movies. They both don't take themselves too seriously. They both are a little silly.
I can see them being rated similar for a variety of reasons.
Con Air is funnier. Face Off, I think... I kind of appreciate the acting job. I think they do a really good job of Nick Cage acting like he's John Travolta, and John Travolta acting like he's Nick Cage. There's some nice stylistic touches from John Woo, I think.
Yes.
In Face Off.
There's doves.
Yeah, there's doves. So, I just want to throw that out there. It wasn't really in the contention for influential.
Did they say the name of the movie?
Yeah, I want to take his face off. So I just want to throw that out there as something like that.
I'll throw out Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of those movies, like, I'm not going to rate it as high or anything or not, but, if it's on, I would watch it, like, I'm pretty sure this had to be Matt Damon's first movie, right?
Probably.
Pretty sure. That's like the story, right? Him and Ben Affleck wrote the movie and refused to shop it around to anybody unless they could do it, so.
It has a couple of good bits in it.
But you like them apples?
I didn't like it. I really didn't like Good Will Hunting.
We've already established your first
movie. Apparently, yeah. So how about a movie I did like that is worthy of some further discussion? That's L.A. Confidential. Have you guys seen L.A. Confidential?
I think you tried to make us watch
it. I was about to say, I think it was another one that was on in our dorm room that I didn't watch.
Yeah, all right, well...
That one I don't know why I didn't watch. I think I was just legitimately, like, too busy doing something else.
So, L.A. Confidential, Kim Basinger, the Aussie, whose name escapes me right now.
I don't know, Guy Pearce?
Sorry. No.
But Guy Pearce was in it, right? I thought.
He might have been.
Russell Crowe?
Russell Crowe, thank you. Mm-hmm. So, those two are really the stars of this movie. He's not the top build, because he's not... But his character in this movie... is just so intense. It's so fantastic. And it's, again, based on a very good book, well adapted for the screen, and it feels so real. And again, this gets back to the time period that I'm very much enamored of, those 1930s, 1940s time period. So, yes, I'm old, but that movie is great.
Guys were guys and women were dolls.
The last thing I want to bring up, Dante's Peak and Volcano. This is kind of the start of our... Isn't it kind of weird that there are dueling movies dealing with the exact same topic? I'm one of those rare people who, I appreciate them both. I appreciate the slightly more serious tone of Dante's Peak, slightly more serious, and the kind of over-the-top campiness of Volcano. I'm wondering if you guys have an opinion on which one is the better Volcano movie.
I've never seen either.
I've seen them both. But I saw them both like in the theater in 1997. So
I think that was with me too.
So it's one time, and I didn't really like either one of them. But I think my recollection is that I like Dante's Peak more. Is that the one where he starts off every day with the like 100 push-ups?
I
That's the only. That's really one of the few things I remember about
this
the
one. With Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, I think that's
it. And Linda Hamilton.
I don't know who she is. Wait, no,
Sarah Connor. Yeah, Sarah Connor.
Yeah,
or Sally Connor, I guess, because
she could be, but she's not. It's an optional nickname.
Volcano is the one that takes place in L.A.
Yeah,
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones.
No, that's stupid. That was so stupid.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I enjoyed it.
And Dante's Peak was like in Colorado.
Yes, it's somewhere out in the woods.
Yeah,
and we don't have to delve into it too far, but just because I already dropped Yoda, that this was also the year of the special edition Star Wars movies being released, like every 3 months or something like that. So, which gave people like our generation the chance to see them in the theater for the first time because we missed out on 1977.
But he changed everything.
Also, yes, brought up the contention of George Lucas going and editing his creations.
Which, Guido shot first.
Yeah, who shot first and like putting
special effects on that weren't there before.
Yeah, putting Jabba into New Hope and things like that. But I mean, that kind of, I think we briefly kind of touched on it in a previous podcast, maybe indirectly, but about artists' ownership over their own work versus the audience ownership of that. Like, George Lucas has all his right to go back and make these changes. Like,
I don't mind that he makes the changes as long as the originals are still available.
Right. And
the thing is, he's killing the originals. He's saying, no, you can't have them anymore.
Blade Runner. The director. Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott. I mean, he's done it. How many versions of Blade Runner are there, too? Like,
also, look at Dune. The director for Dune's name is escaping me right now, but his version was not the final cut. So final cuts. Final cuts are important for directors. So if the director doesn't like the final cut, do you know what he does? He drops his name from the film, right? But the film has to have a director. So the director then becomes Alan Smithy. That's what the guild puts in as the director. So an Alan Smithy film is one that the director has taken his name off of. An Alan Smithy film, Burn, Hollywood, Burn, is one of my worthy mentions. This is a movie about the Alan Smithy effect, and the director of that film was so unhappy with the final cut, he Alan Smithy'd it.
That's weird.
It is so fantastic. And it stars Jackie Chan, for example, is in this with a bit part. He's cameoing as Jackie Chan. And it's a movie about making a film, which I tend to like. So, one more for you guys. We mentioned Starship Troopers. Travis, you haven't mentioned Spawn. Did you like Spawn? I had it for you, so...
Don't mention it. Don't give him the point.
That's not... No.
So, the two things I remember about Spawn are, again, personal story. Well, one's a personal story, one's not. I liked the soundtrack better than the movie. The main thing I remember at the movie is seeing it at the Dollar Theater in Dale City. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do. Was it still a Dollar Theater at that point?
It was a 99 cents. It might... Maybe it wasn't a second-run theater by that point. But, my friend's Game Gear was stolen out of the car while we were in the movie.
Oh gosh!
And my Game Boy was not, so that tells you which one they thought was more legit, I guess. But no, that. So I guess that speaks to my recollection of the movies. I remember those two things.
So it's not something you would have any fond memories of.
I didn't read the comic, so I mean, yeah, Spawn's kind of been one of those ones where he's fallen. It's a comic book that kind of fell off my radar. It does seem like something that should totally be in my wheelhouse, but it never has been.
And one more rom-com from the top 10 list was As Good As It Gets. It's a rom-com that made the top 10 for grossing. Really kind of outside the normal wheelhouse of rom-coms. And it's one that got to me. I like that movie quite a lot.
Because it's old people. It's a rom-com with old people.
I mean, it...
And shockingly, it appeals to you.
It's not just old people.
But it's mainly old people.
It's not about Schmidt with Jack Nicholson. Yeah, Kathy Bates.
I do want to see about Schmidt simply because of that, but I haven't had a chance to yet.
Yeah, As Good As It Gets, pretty strong.
I haven't seen it. I just know it has old people.
I don't know.
Anything
I feel
else?
Like I'm getting older by the minute here.
Yeah, we all are.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing this summation of movies that are 20 to 30 years old.
Before we get too senile, that we can't remember them anymore.
Well, obviously, we barely remember the names of some of these movies and actors anyway.
That's
so
true. We keep looking to each other for help.
And then we have the false memories of movies that didn't actually exist.
Hey, Shazam is a real movie. All right. That wraps up 1997. Can't stop the discourse.